Alrighty, let's rock this thing. 3, 2, 1. Good afternoon. Today is Friday, March the 22nd.
It is indeed.
86th day of the new year. Joining us this afternoon, Simple Country Therapist Luke Quimby. Good afternoon, sir.
Good afternoon.
What is that growing on your
hearty hello to you.
Your this? Right tummy. No, no, this not here? That. This that's here? A new one. Yeah, what is
oh,
that?
Oh, these are my custom earpieces. That's all.
Oh, it's an earpiece.
They,
oh,
they fit the ear.
It looked like a water buffalo, the way the two were lined over each other.
Is it... You have such a great imagination.
I'm yeah, well. I'm
not sure what to do with that.
Nothing.
I'll just leave
it alone.
Leave
and it'll come home.
Yeah. Wagging its tail behind you.
Oh, who knows what this show is going to end up being, but we'll find out where it starts when
I
we come back.
I certainly don't know.
At my bank, I feel at home. I'm Trish Greggie of the Journey's End, and my bank is Redwood Capital Bank.
At my bank, hometown banking isn't just something they say, it's how they do business. I'm Kevin McClendon of Georgia's Glass, and my bank is Redwood Capital Bank.
At my bank, we invest in the future of our community every single day. I'm Greg Foster, and my bank is Redwood Capital Bank.
Redwood Capital Bank, our interest is you. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
Bad phone.
Good afternoon. Nothing's worse than bad phone, by the way.
Yeah, brand new, right out of the bag.
Good afternoon, KINS News and Information Times, 3:13. Mr. Quimby's alongside. He's got his book. He's got his quote. We got a show.
I do have a quote. From Plato, no less. We can easily forgive a child who is afraid of the dark. The real tragedy in life is when men are afraid of the light.
Well, I suppose that depends on who you work with.
Hence comes everybody's favorite defense mechanism called denial, which is not the river in Egypt.
You've been working on that one for a month?
I figured it out, actually.
The denial?
I read it years ago, and I went, hey, I could use that sometime.
Oh, you keep looking for the right time.
I keep looking for the right time.
Yeah.
And today's the day.
How much fear is learned, and how much fear is... for lack of a better term, genetically programmed?
Well, there's an experiment they did with a baby, a crawly baby. And they stick a... crawling baby.
Crawling.
And they stick a sheet of glass out over the edge of a table. And the baby crawls out, and they overlook the edge, and they start backing up. So they have some perception of the depth and lack of support, because they can't cognate on glass, solid, extended, blah, blah, blah. So that's an innate fear. People are not innately afraid of snakes or spiders. That's often a learned experience. And frequently a very healthy learned experience, because there are snakes and spiders that can kill you, right? But there have been stories of, in Africa, for example, of diplomats and whatnot that live there, and there's a baby in the backyard in a crib, and there's a python crawling through the crib over the baby's legs, and it's just keeping on going, and the baby's stroking the python going goo, 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 goo. So it's not an inherent fear. Most of the fears that we come across in daily life are taught or amplified in our childhood. One of the common ones is fear of public speaking, which comes from the attributions of the seven deadly sins of childhood: lazy, crazy, dumb, sick, bad, stupid, and silly. So if parents put the kids down, then the kids are afraid to say what they think, what they feel, what they want openly. So that's a generated fear.
So fear of talking
and public speaking is the big version of fear of talking to your parents. Now, if you're 4 years old, you're looking up at your parents all the time. If you're looking up at you, the sky gets dark, you know. So when kids look up, here they are looking at this large, imposing, often disapproving figure. And so they learn fairly early what is acceptable and what is not acceptable. And they get things like, oh, you shouldn't be afraid of that. That's silly, honey. And blah, blah, blah. And they get dismissed.
Dismissive.
They get dismissed out of hand. And then kids do not learn to, one, trust their feelings, two, develop the capacity to speak up and confront the issue. Well, when you're four and your parents are dismissing you, you don't have a lot of power. So most people then go inside. They just turn back on themselves and figure out some other way to deal with it.
So the disapproval is a source of fear of public speaking? I have fear of small group speaking.
Oh, how small? You mean like 4, 5, 6?
No. Let's say somewhere.
Party group?
I'll get a little at a 10 to 25. Over 25.
Like a seminar?
Piece of cake. A large enough.
Well, you're a Rotary president.
Yeah, I've done this thing for 30 years.
Right, and you're talking in front of 150 guys.
Speeches is cool.
No big deal.
I mean, to me, that's kind of almost a power.
But what's the setting for 15 to 20 people? I mean, like a seminar you're attending, or you're leading a group? Or?
No, it's not even content. It's just somewhere in that range. I got to make eye contact with everybody. I got to do the there's internal expectation of performance.
Well, that sounds like a
where if it's five or six of us,
like a speech class or a presentation in grade school.
Oh, okay, a classroom. You know,
if you do a classroom presentation to 15, 20 kids. And somebody laughs at you, and the teacher does not take hold of that circumstance.
Back at that time, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, now, then, if you don't laugh at me, I'm wondering, are you not paying attention?
Well, I've never liked you, so I'd never laugh at you.
Exactly. Yeah, and speaking in front of thousands.
Right.
No issue at all.
Piece of cake.
Yeah.
But so frequently, when you have a specific differentiation like 4 or 5, no problem. 100,000, no problem. But 20 people?
Yeah, like a dozen to two dozen. It gets a little.
Then I start looking for some early prototype for that, and that would be something like a grade school presentation.
Yeah, that would probably make sense.
You know, now he's going to tell us about his pet frog. Yeah. And people go, oh, you got a pet frog? What a jerk.
Well, I did when I came in. Now it's lunch.
Now I got a flat frog.
Yeah.
Breedy.
That means you only got half of them the first time around. Interesting.
So it's frequently useful to start looking at childhood similarities to kind of track down where the shame or the embarrassment or the fear
where the issue was.
If you get laughed at, that's shame-based kind of stuff. That's different than guilt.
It's 3:19.
Now a minute of sunshine for Humboldt. If you have a dog or plan to add one to your family, you'll want to know about the Humboldt Dog Obedience Group, or HumDog for short. HumDog, a nonprofit organization, began in 1978 and is run by 50 volunteers. Its purpose is to teach dogs good citizenship. HumDog conducts classes nearly every Monday evening throughout the year at Redwood Acres. There are puppy training classes, basic training for dogs over 6 months old, and more advanced classes. The modest fees are used to pay the rent and professional trainers. Each session lasts an hour. HumDog also puts on two annual events, the Dog Expo in March and the Dog Agility Trial in August. Both draw crowds of dog lovers. For those who apply for funds to spay or neuter their dog, HumDog has a special fund that may be able to help. See their website, www.humdog.org. Sunshine for Humboldt is a nonprofit civic association dedicated to the people and places that make this a good place to live.
Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Times, 3:24. We are talking shop this afternoon with Lou Quimby. Lou, the concept of fear and healthy fear,
Healthy fear.
Healthy fear.
Dark alleys in a ghetto?
That would be a
dark alleys in
good
New York.
Point. Jumping in the lion cage.
Jumping in the lion cage,
or I guess pit these days.
There's a
that would make sense too.
There's a that insurance program that advertises on TV a lot.
Mutual of Omaha.
Flo.
The Geico.
And the gal comes in and says, "Where's that Flo? Did you tell my husband about this thing?" And she said, "Yes, you can bundle your house and your car and your blah, blah, blah." And she says, "Really, a confidence builder?" And she says, "Oh, that's what it was." Then they cut to this her husband, who's standing in a park where this guy is juggling three chainsaws. And the guy's going, "Come on, give me one of those. Come on, give me one. Give me one." You know, like just blind, stupid confidence,
right,
without any training or any knowledge of just the idea. Now, that can be dangerous as well. People that do things without training. Skydiving, for example. When I skydove, I took a full day of ground training. And then the next day, we jumped. But you learn how to land, bend your knees, roll, land, bend your knees, roll, over and over again. How to dump your chute if it balloons on you or does a Mae West. You dump that, and then you trigger your backup chute and all like that. Well, lots of people just can do that on their own. I mean, you have to hire a pilot, and he's not going to go for it. But lots of people do things without proper training. And you don't need a license for some of these lightweight aircraft things, like
the lawnmower
paraglider,
airplane.
The lawnmower airplane thing, yeah. Whatnot, and people go up without any training.
Yeah, parasail.
Yeah. They go up without any training to fly, one, or two, any understanding of aerodynamic forces, and it looks so easy. Yeah, right. And then they get themselves into trouble. They showed one guy attempting to take a parasail and do a loop-the-loop with it. And he got to the top of the loop, and he fell into his parachute. Holy Toledo. I mean, D-U-M-B, dumb. Oh, what is that Ron White says? You can't fix stupid.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
You can fix a lot of things, but you can't.
I'm glad you were talking about his dog.
Stupid. His dog?
Yeah. I'll tell you during the break.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. you can't do that kind of.
Because those kind of people don't ask. It doesn't occur to them
that they can't
to ask for help. It doesn't occur to them to inquire about discipline or basics or training, or they just go, "Hey, I could do that," and then they go do it. And sometimes they get away with it. You know, nobody dies. Then other times he falls through his own chute trying to do a loop-de-loop.
There was a conversation I had earlier this week, and it reminded me of something you said, reminded me of it. The human brain matures at what, mid 20?
About, yeah, early 20s. Mm-hmm.
So the perception of, or the belief of, personal immortality.
As a 15, 16, younger, 17 year old.
Yeah.
It's got nothing to do with cognition. It's all affective. It's all testosterone and feeling. And see, one of the difficulties in teenage years is that they're half child and half grown up. And one of the jobs of being a teenager is to start learning how to live out of the family and in the world. And so they have to learn their own identity, how they are similar and different than mom and dad's values and feelings, and how they make their own mark. So in families that are grossly dysfunctional, 14, 15, or 16-year-old frequently has got to beat dad to a pulp and then get out of the house in order to get his identity, his freedom, because dad, say, had been a bully all of his life.
Literally fighting for his freedom.
Literally, yeah. So dad beats him up for the last time. I've heard this hundreds of times. "Well, how'd you get out?" "Well, I decked him. I knocked him to the floor. And then he said, 'Get out.' And I said, 'Goodbye.'" And then he started on his own life, right? And he lived with his pals for a while and blah, blah, blah. So when young men are doing all this daredevil, putting their lives in danger, they're working on one, just pure testosterone. That looks like fun. Yup. One and two, they're working on what their identity is because they're doing this with and in front of their peers.
Both are pretty motivating factors.
Right, emotionally speaking. But there's no rational controls to speak of. If you look at, what is it, Channel 66, the world's dumbest, and you look at some of the bicyclers.
I can handle that for about 10 seconds. I go, you know, rock on, dude. Take yourself out. Yeah, just get out of the gene pool.
When you look at some of the cyclers and they build themselves a ramp, right? And they're going to ride this ramp up and do a flip and then drop into the lake. And all you have, if you know anything about physics, all you have to do is look at the ramp and go, adios, muchachos. Because then the ramp's going to, it's going to choke off the ramp. You're never going to make it to the lake. He's going to go up, bang. And they do.
Amazing. Physics wins one more time.
Yeah.
It's 3:30.
Decade of Difference presents a brand new competition, Innovate, a business challenge opportunity to pitch your creative idea. First step, upload a 60 to 90 second elevator pitch highlighting your business venture idea by March 29th. 40 finalists will be selected to move on to phase two. But don't wait. First 100 entries receive a free iTunes gift card. To upload your video and get more information, visit decadeofdifference.org. A grand prize of up to $2,500 will be awarded. Don't wait. Innovate.
Good afternoon, KINS News and Information Times, 3:35. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Simple Country Therapist Lou Quimby. Lou, we've talked a little bit about fear on one side. How about the other side? As you want to say, you know, there's two sides.
Flip sides of the coin.
Yeah,
flip sides of the coin. Fear and excitement are flip sides of the coin.
I was thinking more confidence than.
Well, fear and excitement are effective energetic states. Confidence has got a big cognitive piece to it because you've done some of the work about assessing skills and developing discipline skills. But fear and excitement are flip sides of the same coin. And it's pretty exciting jumping out of a perfectly good airplane with nothing but an army surplus silk rag on my back. That was exciting. But I made darn sure before I did that that this army surplus silk rag didn't have any holes in it.
And was attached.
And I watched the guy pack it. Right. Okay. So fear and excitement. I remember the first time I went on a big roller coaster. It took me about 30 minutes to talk myself into it. And then after the ride ended, I wanted to be the first in line for the next ride, which, of course, couldn't do. But it's like going up on the 20-foot board and looking down and going, oh, gee, in water, right? Oh, gee, oh, gee, oh, gee, oh, gee. And then
stepping off,
and then, oh, what a rush, and then zipping up the board again.
Yeah, and blasting through everybody.
So, fear and excitement. And when you see a bunch of other people do it, you go, okay, nobody's dying. So it's safe enough. And then you go up and do it. And then the fear gives way to excitement when you're safe. You were talking earlier about inherent fears like heights, drowning, which is loss of breath, can't breathe, right? So if you're jumping off a high board into the water, you got water and you've got height. So those two fears will kick in.
Jeez, if you have a portable microphone.
Right. Oh, help me. So when you jump in, then you push off from the bottom and you get up to the surface and you can breathe again and nobody hurts. And so you go, okay, I have conquered those fears and I now know the limits of water and that. So you were saying before I so rudely interrupted you.
Do you need to have danger for excitement?
Well, what is danger anyway? Danger, usually...
Well, you're saying your roller coaster.
Yeah, I usually associate danger with potential harm to life and limb. That's my idea of
real
danger.
Real or imagined or just real?
But then since I've become a therapist, then I associate danger with people with no or loose boundaries. So it isn't... But I'm going to put myself in harm's way. Other people can put me in harm's way. So you look at, there's another one where there's a road race on dirt road and the guy's standing off to the right shoulder And he sees the guy coming and he gets out of the way. And the driver goes right off the road and just zips right through where this guy was standing, right? And there's all kinds of circumstances where people are standing on the sidelines on the outside of a curve, which is where the vehicles are going to go if they lose traction, not on the inside of the curve.
Right, yeah.
And they're standing right there with their camera. And then all of a sudden the car fills the image in the camera and you see that it blacks out. And then they zoom in to the guy that has the camera. You all right, Bill?
Oh, that was really scary, man.
So nobody dies, right? But they edit out the ones that go to the hospital or the ones that die. So editing on these reality programs is always interesting about what they don't show, because every time you see a skateboard accident, you never see people dead. It's always somebody with a crotch hit or they limp away. But I've never seen an ambulance.
Or some kind of a big tumble.
Yeah, thing. Yeah, I've never seen an ambulance called. So they edit all this stuff. So there's plenty of people get hurt, but you don't see it on TV, not in the reality shows. So excitement
is almost more titillation.
Yeah, it triggers emotional attention, and people do fantasy in their head about, oh, I could do that. What would that be like? Oh, gee, that would be exciting.
Is there an endorphin component?
Oh, yeah. You can trigger your own endorphins just watching stuff. The Walter Mitty syndrome. Yeah, you can trigger your own rush just by watching. You don't have to be there putting yourself in harm's way. But you've got to be hooked in order to do that. You don't generate endorphins spontaneously. You have to be hooked inside your head to do that, because your body won't do it spontaneously.
When you watch movies, not you.
Well,
specifically.
That's yeah.
But when someone watches movies.
Same kind of thing. If you're addicted to, like, big action movies, you can get an endorphin rush because there's lots.
Kind of projecting yourself into that.
They spend millions of dollars, takes and retakes and takes and retakes and editing and enhancing and to make the Steven Seagal beatdown letter perfect, right, where he never gets a bruise. Yeah. And so if you don't know how movies are made, it all looks magical, and it's easy for a child of any age to insert themselves into that movie and do some version of, I could do that.
Well, I guess we did kind of see that with the Avatar movie a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
That's, I guess, worthy of another discussion. KINS, News and Information Time, it's 3:42. We'll be back. Final segment of the week, Lou Quimby.
Sacred Heart Church invites you to join us every Sunday for our liturgical celebrations. Saturday, 4 p.m. Confessions. 5 p.m. Sunday's Vigil Mass. 7 p.m. Spanish Mass. And on Sundays, 9:30 Morning Mass and 12:30 Spanish Mass. Come and celebrate with us.
Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 3:46. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Lou Quimby. Lou, the concept of reality versus
magical powers.
Well, it could be magical powers. It could be fantasy. It could be unrealistic fears, unrealistic expectations. I mean, there's a continuum there, obviously.
Yeah.
How do you recommend folks to stay grounded? You know, with all the things that are out there, we got the videos, we got the games, we got movies, we've got some of the money, the unreal amounts of money that are being spent doing this and that. And how do you keep a regular guy?
Why should they stay grounded? And what does grounded mean? So what is your opinion, your prejudice, and your value system about what being grounded means? Well, you get the point?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So then you start looking at society and you go, oh, okay. Thoreau said, most people live lives of quiet desperation, which means they're doing the compliant social thing and go to work, make the money, come home, take care of the kids, clean up the dinner, go to bed, get up in the morning, take the kids to school, go to work, blah, blah, blah,
well,
blah, blah.
I'm thinking, okay, so, somebody who's my body size,
right,
used to think being an astronaut would be way cool.
Right.
In fact, I, at that time, was almost blind in one eye. Had the genetic composition that I would be bigger than the capsule.
Right, exactly.
There were certain inherent handicaps that I brought to the table that would not be able, let alone the smarts.
There's no way.
Thank you very much for your timing.
But you can go up in Virgin Airways space capsule now if you got the money.
Sure.
I mean, you can get up in space. But
being a horse jockey.
But you can't be a fighter pilot.
Wouldn't have made it either. I mean, so I,
if you're a fighter pilot and you punch out, your legs are so long, it trims you off right at the knees.
So how do you learn to work with your strengths to maximize the opportunity rather than going off into la-la land?
And still have the fantasies and blah, 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 blah. If you go off in la-la land and you're consistently disappointed, that means you're using fantasy to make yourself feel good as opposed to using your skills, other skills, to make you feel good. So, like, you're tall, so you can play basketball. That's a skill. How tall were you in the seventh grade? Big?
Big-ish, but not the biggest.
So, so as you get taller and taller, you play more ball and you sink more baskets. And so if that's satisfying for you, then that's an identity that you actually have the physical skill for. If you don't find that satisfying and you haven't anything else that you like to do, then you're going to spend a lot of time in fantasy. And who knows what that leads to. Sex, drugs, rock and roll, disillusion. So, yeah, looking at the skills you have, everybody wants somewhere, somehow, to be a, like a super dancer or something. I can't dance for beans. I took dance classes.
So did I. I almost led to divorce.
And you're supposed to dance with your wife. You twit.
Oh, they forgot that part.
Darn. And I had piano lessons. I got A's in theory, and I got F's in performance because I just cannot make my left hand and my right hand do different things at the same time. So I play the flute, but with the flute, all 10 fingers make one note at a time. But with the piano, you got two hands doing different things. It just made me nuts. So I don't have that skill. So then I go, okay, I'm going to stop beating this dead horse and I'm going to do something that I'm skilled at. And so I do. So part of that is the understanding and acceptance of enough is enough.
There's been enough bloodshed on this one. I will back up and walk away.
I mean, the skills I have are enough to make me happy. I don't have to endlessly acquire go after skills that I don't have the facility for. I don't do language very well. Lucy speaks 4 or 5 languages, but I don't do language well at all. My Spanish is buenos dias, and I'm pretty much done.
Well, but, so are we here.
Oh, okay.
Good timing. Thanks for coming by.
Yeah.
We've been Talking Shop with Luke Quimby. Join us Monday afternoon for more Talk Shop. Till then, go out and make it a good day. Hug somebody else. See you tomorrow morning.